Welcome to the Roots Podcast, brought to you from the Training and Equipping Ministry of Chanctonbury, exploring revival, church, leadership and culture. Discover more about our community at chanctonbury.org.uk.
Good morning. Thanks, guys. I want to talk to you today about God. More specifically, the question of God's existence. A very important question. The most important question, actually, in some ways. And if you look around you in the world, you might think that that's not true. We live in a society now which thinks, well, you can believe in God if you want, maybe not believe in God if you don't want, or maybe have a kind of New Age spiritualism if you want. That's all fine, because in the end, it doesn't really matter. What matters is how you behave in society, right? How you are day to day, do you follow the laws, and you know, all that stuff is personal. It's not really important. It is important. And I'd go as far as to say that's a pernicious lie. Belief in God is not like a question about the world. It's not a question like, oh, what color is that car? Or what's the weather like today? It's not a question about the world. It's a question about what kind of world do you actually live in? What is the nature of the universe? It's the foundational question. It's the kind of question that directs everything else that you think, that you believe, how you act. Questions like, is life a gift or an accident? Is there such a thing as things that are actually right and actually wrong, or is it all just a matter of cultural opinion? Is there ultimate justice in the world? Will things be put right in the end? Or is the only justice you're going to get what you can get here and now? How you answer those questions are going to affect an awful lot about what you think the world's about, how you treat people, what kind of laws you think are acceptable, what kind of structures in society you want to promote. All of those things will flow from those types of questions, and those questions are based on whether you think God is real and who you think that God is. Yeah? And it's not just about you or you or you. It's a societal question as well, right? What's in the air? What laws do we promote? What kind of society is a good society anyway? What kind of family is a good family? All of this flows from it. And actually, this societal aspect is very much what happened to me. When I was younger. As Jim alluded, I grew up in a Christian home, and at the risk of sounding a little bit pompous, quite the Christian home, because my parents were missionaries. My father has a master's degree in theology, reads his Bible in Greek and in Hebrew. My grandfather was a missionary with my grandmother for 42 years. He has a PhD in theology. My grandmother had a master's degree in Christian education. My aunt is the endowed chair of theology at a seminary. So imagine their despair when they saw me at university. But anyway. But despite all of that, the world was telling me a very different story as a young fella. You see, the world was telling me, oh, that's very nice, you see. But when you go to school, is that foundational to what you do at school? Not really. They go, that's great. Just put that to one side. Let's learn about this here science. Let's learn about grammar. Let's learn about how you're going to be in the world. Don't worry about all that religious stuff. That's the nature of our society, isn't it? That's how we're structured, you see? And I went through that, and a few other things happened. You know, I'd look perhaps at other Christians. I'd maybe pray for something, and it wouldn't happen the way I wanted to. And I'd be going, what's up with that, you see? And then eventually I got to university, and I studied anthropology and history. And I remember being in an anthropology class, and I'd been thinking about this a long time. And I took comparative religion. And in that class, we studied all these different religious faiths, you see, the role they play in cultures, how culture shapes religion, religion in turn shapes culture, how it evolves and changes over time, how you can track that through different societies across history, how different religious beliefs have evolved to respond to different environmental factors, and lots of other fun things. And I remember the thought came into my mind, I see what this is now. This is good. This is a kind of cultural response we've had to life. Life is tough. Society is unpredictable. We need systems of thought to help us to organize ourselves. and respect one another for the greater good. And so Christianity is like one of those. And if I was born over here, I might be a Hindu. If I was born over there, I might be a Muslim. If I was born over there, I might be a Native American spiritualist, whatever. That's fine. But you see, that's all it is. Right? That's all it is. And nothing, but nothing, challenged that view in the whole world around me. My parents saw it. They were like, but what about all this stuff that happened? And I'd be like, yeah, but what? You know, that's just, we just did things. We experienced things. People experience things all the time. Hindus experience things. Buddhists experience things. We've experienced things. So what? Yeah. In the end, they kind of gave up on me. And by the age of 21, when I met Ellie, I was already not a Christian. And I remained a kind of atheist and agnostic for something like 14, 15 years, for a long time. And I was quite happy. I studied and trained as an archaeologist. I worked, you know, developed my career. We had kids. And then one day, we had the kids, and Ellie, much to my surprise, said, I want to take the kids to church for cultural reasons. Okay, why not? And I was going, why? Why? It's just, well, okay, go ahead. And so I went along, and people did try, bless them, they try to say, hey, Will, you should. I'd be like, nah, it's cool, you know. I recognize that religion's good for society. I always have. I always thought, oh, that's a good thing. So I'm not going to, I was not like an atheist campaigner or anything like that. But I'm not going to be convinced by somebody just telling me, you should know Jesus. I know about Jesus, I'd say. That's fine. You see, my worldview just didn't have God as a real possibility. That's the fundamental thing. You see, in my world, there just wasn't an actual God. You see? And so all of a sudden, by extension, no matter what you told me, it's just some stuff that you think. That's great. You need to cut through people's worldview. You see? And you get quite entrenched in that. And so there I was until I read a book. This book, which is not a Christian book. In fact, the guy who wrote this book is an ardent atheist. His name is Raymond Tallis, and he's a thinker and cultural shaker. And I wanted to read you a little something that he wrote just to give you a flavor of how worldview interacts with how we think. So he wrote this back in 2007. He said, the great challenge for the immediate future is to find a way of thinking about ourselves, about human nature, that does not fall into one of two things, a supernaturalism that sees our destiny as predetermined by the essence that has been implanted in us by a creator, and a naturalism that says that we are entirely parts of nature and subject to natural laws. Both ways of thinking lead to a self-fulfilling sense of helplessness, which could be very dangerous. In order to avoid a regression to a militant, proselytizing supernaturalism, which will hamper the exercise of reason in human affairs and may result in increasing conflict, we need to underline the evidence that religion is an entirely human institution, though a dysfunctional one. In order to avoid a bleak naturalism, we should acknowledge the extraordinary achievements of humanity in distancing human life from organic existence. Without a clear view of human potential, we shall be inhibited in our attempts to address the many practical difficulties that lay ahead. I could probably give you a long lecture on lots of stuff in there, but what's interesting there, do you see how his presupposition, his world, about God doesn't exist, therefore, religious thought is just human thinking. That's all it is. It's dysfunctional, it's dangerous, it's anti-reason. You see? And actually note how in the end, what's his solution? We elevate the human. We worship humanity itself, is his answer to this. So that's very interesting. Now here's the thing. I read his book, which by the way, if you're into the brain, consciousness, brilliant, very good book. I recommend it, seriously. It's very good. And I read it, and an odd thought came to my mind after I'd finished this book. This book does not argue against God, by the way. It doesn't say, there's no God, forget it. There's little hints, like here he puts here, you know, I, on the other hand, I do not believe we are immortal souls, unhappy lodgers accidentally trapped in 70 kilograms of protoplasm, you know, that kind of thing. I don't believe in any of this. spiritualist stuff. But you know what struck me? Because I'm an archaeologist, you see, and the thing about archaeology is it's all about evidence. And it's all about what you can know based on the evidence that you have. Yeah? And understanding that different evidence has different qualities, different weight to it. Yeah? So someone might say, I have an old map here which shows this site of this medieval settlement. And somebody else might say, well, that could be wrong, but here I've got a geophysical survey, and that shows you where that settlement is. And well, yeah, but that might lack detail. Oh, hang on, I've got some trenches we dug across it now, and we've actually physically retrieved it. So do you see each type of evidence has strengths and weaknesses? Yeah? The map gives you historical context, the geophysics gives you magnetic resonance readings, and the physical one, retrieval of artifacts, is quite narrow, but it gives you detail. And so you combine the two to give you the answer that you want. And so I was thinking about this as I thought about this book, and I thought to myself, a weird thought came into my head. I thought, this book is not contradict the Bible. You see, it's all that theology in my family background. It just came to my mind. I thought, this book is fascinating. He says that human consciousness is not spiritual, but yet not, you know, physical. It's kind of this mysterious thing in the middle. It kind of embodies all of you. It does all these things. And I thought to myself, well, that sounds an awful lot like Genesis, doesn't it? Genesis 2, when he says, he gathered the dust together and he breathed into his nostrils. And of course, the word breathe there is Hebrew for spirit as well. And so I thought, huh, actually nothing here, because obviously what he's rejecting there is a kind of form of Platonism, right? Christians actually, believe it or not, don't believe in that. We don't believe we're these immortal, translucent souls that kind of got implanted into these physical bodies. We believe that God created us from the dust and breathed his life into us, right? And I thought, that doesn't contradict it, actually. It really doesn't. You could read this book, accept everything he's written, and it will not affect your faith. Actually, it shouldn't do. The only thing that's different is how he decides to see the world, right? I thought, this chap has very strong beliefs, but as I read his work, I thought, the thing he's presenting to me doesn't substantiate his belief about God. Yeah? It doesn't. And then I thought to myself, well, hang on a minute, because Raymond Tallis is a smart guy. He's a neurosurgeon. He's a philosopher. He's very smart. And I thought, well, if Raymond Tallis can overlook something as basic as that in religion, maybe I've overlooked it too, is what I thought. Maybe I have. And then I realized I've spent a long time thinking about professional development, reading about the brain, studying philosophical concepts for fun, and I hadn't thought about God properly as an adult, ever. It just hit me. And I thought, And then I thought about Ellie, and Ellie always kind of believed in a God of sorts. And I thought, maybe, I don't know. Maybe I should think about it, I thought. And so I started in 2012, thereabouts, and I spent about 4 years. Not intensely 8 hours a day, but I would, every time I drive, I'd listen to a debate, or I'd listen to a theology lecture, a philosophy lecture, or I'd listen to an atheist tell me why God didn't exist, and then I'd listen to a theist tell me why God did exist, and then I'd read an article, and I just did this over and over. I read about Buddhism, I read about Hinduism, I read about all the various different big faiths, Islam, and I learned quite a lot in that period. It was quite interesting. And I read, and I read, and I thought, and I thought. You can tell my character probably from hearing me. This is kind of how I go. And I thought about it for a long time. And then one day, I just kind of hit a saturation point. You know, you get so much of an idea. You go, yeah, correct. I'm hearing this debate, but I've heard this before. I've heard that before. I've heard that before. I think I know the arguments that are going to come up, and I know the objections that are going to come up. And I was lying in bed one night in 2016, and I was just thinking about two ideas which are really important to me, which I'll share with you now. Those two ideas are written on your sheet of paper there, causality and teleology. They're really nerdy. All that means, causality just means, think about this. This is an idea that really captured me. For anything to exist, right, it's based on something else that existed before it, right? I'm here because my parents were here, and they're there because their parents were there, and they're there because they're all the way back to whatever. Yeah, and the Earth is here because something, you know, is formed in the solar system. The solar system is there because, you know, all these gases came together, created a star, and exploded an interesting physical manifestation. And then all the way back, and eventually, so you get to a point, if you believe the physics or whatever, there's a point at which there was a first thing. Yeah? There just was. Has to be. Because the thing is, if the first thing had itself to be created, then there would have been nothing for that. You see what I mean? Eventually, there's a first thing. And there has to be a first thing, because actually, you can't have an infinite regress. What's that, Will? It's where you have an infinity in the past. It's a bit like saying, hey, I've just counted all the negative numbers. That's the best one. Yeah, -3, -2, -1. Whew, that took a long time. You can't count all the negative numbers, can you? Because every time you go back, one, there's always another one behind it. At some point, you got to start. It's just a fact. We can go into that later, but that was very clear to me. There has to be a start somewhere. And what does that imply? The thing that starts has to be qualitatively different from the thing that comes after it, you see. Otherwise, it itself has to be started. So at some point, something starts everything that is different from what comes after, because it has to be the first thing. Yeah? Thought number one. Aristotle was on that as well. Thought number two, teleology. It means design, fine-tuning. Have anyone heard of that? I know Dylan has, but anyone else? Okay. The concept of fine-tuning. So you may have heard it called the anthropic principle, the idea that actually everything's designed very carefully in our universe for us to exist here, for us to have any kind of experience at all. And some people you may have heard talk about this in terms of saying, hey, actually, don't worry about it. The only reason you think that is because you've evolved to exist in it, right? Yeah, if the universe was a bit different, maybe some very different creatures would be sat there marveling at their good fortune. So if you've heard that, I'm here to tell you that that's a very, very bad misrepresentation of the evidence. That is not what's implied. Fine-tuning talks about the constants within the physical nature of reality that sustain everything around us. And the best example I can think of that really, it gets me even now, is the force of gravity. So the force of gravity is governed by a single value called the gravitational constant. And what I learned is the force of gravity is actually fine-tuned so that if gravity was a tiny, tiny, tiny bit stronger, the whole universe would collapse into a black hole. And if it was a tiny, 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 tiny bit bigger, or looser, sorry, weaker, the universe would just expand into a bunch of atoms and nothing would happen. And I mean nothing at all. No life, no chemistry, nothing. And what arrested my imagination was to understand that actually for that force, for you to be able to, what's the range, basically? Yeah. Imagine a dial on a radio is what I've seen is really good. And you imagine, okay, that dial, if I turn it to the right, gravity's stronger. If I turn it to the left, gravity's weaker. How many points do you think you need on that dial? You see? It's actually, they've done the math, it's 10 to the 60 points. Yeah, what does that mean? It's finely tuned. There's been, since the Big Bang, 13.7 billion years ago, 10 to the 20 seconds. Okay? 10 to the 20 seconds since the Big Bang. Take that number. Multiply it again by 10 to the 20. Multiply that again by 10 to the 20. You've got 10 to the 60. That's how many points are on the dial. You turn the dial one of those points to the right. The universe implodes into a black hole. You turn the dial one of those points to the left. The universe expands into nothing. Yeah? That's true. The argument's not whether that's true. The argument is why it's true. So I was lying in bed, believe it or not, thinking about these two things. I was. I was thinking. And at one moment, it just hit me. Like something just ripped through my reality. And I realized I'm looking at the work of the Creator God. I'm looking at it right now. It hit me very hard because I thought, well, I felt God's power, God's mercy, God's forbearance. Incredible. Because, well, think about it. What does it imply? Think about what we just thought about with the fine-tuning of the universe, all that. Yeah? Just so you can have a cup of coffee. Just so you can sit here and listen to me. Just so you can do whatever you do in your life. The whole universe is structured just so that you can sit there and be you. Right? All of it's there. Because sometimes people will say, well, yeah, but we're this tiny little speck in the universe, and you know, the universe is so big. So, babies are small. That doesn't mean they're unimportant, does it? You see? So what does it tell us? It told me, well, a few things. Because remember what we said, what you think about God will affect how you see the world, right? So if you think God is kind of an interesting spiritual being, that's one thing. If you think God's a bunch of spirits or a force, then that's another. So the thing that I realized when I thought about it, because I thought, well, the universe is different now. Who is this God? Well, here's a thought. The creator God is powerful. Yes? These are not river pixies. They're not weather gods, are they? No. This is a being that is vastly more powerful. And the more enormous and the more intricate the universe, the more it testifies to God's power. It's one thing to look at the planet Earth and go, wow, whoever created this is incredible. It's another thing to look at the totality of the universe, which is, unless you've nerded out on this, you probably have little conception about how big the universe is. It's just insanely big. And I just marvel at the power behind it. It's incredible. You know, did you know you can't even represent the solar system to scale? Did you know that? Like, you can't on a page, you can't do it. Like, if you were to reduce the sun to the size of a pea, the Earth would be like out in the graveyard somewhere in the size of a grain of sand. It's just vast. Vast. And this being creates all that. The being has knowledge. And we cheapen the word knowledge because we say it of ourselves, but has knowledge with a capital K, knowledge, you see. Knowledge about things not that are, but things as they could or should be to create a new reality. Yeah, true knowledge. A knowledge which is, yeah, you know, the more I learn, the less I realize I understand what even that means. Incredible knowledge. The being is personal. Yeah, it's personal. You can infer that from those two factors. Because it's not like accidental, is it? When you think about the nature again of the universe, how fine-tuned it is it an accident that we're here and that, you know, James has blue eyes and I have brown? Are these accidents? When literally to the nth degree, and gravity is only one, I mean, there's like 20 or 30 of these things, all different factors that are all finely tuned. You see, God is personal. The creator God is personal. And it's not just me telling you this. Just think about the implications of the evidence. That is what's going on. You see? God is personal, and God cares for us. Because, again, think about it. All of this, all of creation, so that you can live, love, forgive, be noble, be all the things that make humans, when we're at our best, very good things indeed. All of that so that you can experience the gift of life. Tell me the being that did all that doesn't care about you. It does, doesn't it? You see? It hit me pretty hard. It was interesting for me. And ever since, I've been grappling with, okay, what do I do with this? What are the implications of it? How do I live now? You see? I'm not here to give a lecture on the resurrection. But that was next on my list, and that's the reason I became a Christian. Because actually, when I thought about the religions, and I thought about the God of each of those religions, you think about Hinduism, you think about Buddhism, you see, this God does not fit the profile. I mean, Buddhists don't really believe in God. You see, and Hindus believe in some kind of cyclical universe. You see, it sounded to me suspiciously like, you see, the Christian God. And to kind of go back, why does that matter? Because again, the nature of the God that you think you have in the world defines who you think you are, you see? If you had, I don't know, ancient Babylonian texts, the Enuma Elish, you know, Babylonians believed that the universe was created by a war between the gods, and Marduk, the main god, ripped this other god in half and created the universe out of their carcass. Nice. And then humans got created because the gods were too lazy to work, and so they slit the throat of one of the gods and formed humans out of the blood. And made them as slaves. That's what you are. These kind of slaves because the gods didn't want you to do any work. And that's what you're here to do. You see? That then shapes, okay, what am I here for? What matters? What is my purpose? Who am I? You see? And so understanding what the evidence points to in God's nature, in God's very being, is just a foundational belief that I'm so keen that everyone understands. You see? So, okay, where are we? We got time. I thought I'd think about some practical considerations of this. So let's say you've kind of, you've taken this on board and you think, oh yeah, okay, this is great. I've got a nephew, I've got a young friend, I want to talk about this. And you tell them, oh, I heard this guy talking to the church, he was saying about causality, he was saying about fine-tuning. And they go away and they come back and go, yeah, okay, man, I've been on YouTube, right? I know now. What about this? What about that? So I thought, if you're up for it, we can talk a little bit about deductive arguments, if you want, maybe. Well, what's that? It's just a way to break down why you think something's true. Simple. So instead of just saying, I think this thing's true, and somebody else might say, well, I think this thing's true. You might say, well, I think this thing's true because of these reasons. And these reasons are related in such a way that the conclusion flows necessarily from those reasons. That's all that means. So think a little bit about the cause of the universe. Yeah? You might say something like, okay, let's have two premises. Let's have whatever begins to exist has a cause. Do you remember? So everything that's here is here because something was there before it, right? So whatever's come into being, yeah, has a cause of its coming into being. You see what I mean? Premise one, reasonable. Premise two, the universe began to exist. Yeah? So if the universe began to exist, and everything that begins to exist has a cause of its existence, then the universe has a cause, capital C. You see? Now, when you look at this, the argument then starts. So if you Google this, what you'll discover is that lots of people get very agitated. And this is why, by the way, you'll see physicists arguing about, did the universe actually begin at the Big Bang? What happened before the Big Bang? What about quantum loop universes where you get these kind of cycles of creation and things like that? What about all this stuff, you see? It all stems from the desire to have an eternal universe, you see? And ever since Bertrand Russell, ever since David Hume, all these people who didn't want there to be a God, one of the things that they base their belief on is the universe itself that's eternal. It's the universe itself that is the thing that creates us all. They kind of replace God with the universe, you see? But the universe doesn't hold you accountable, you see? So it's better to have the universe than God in their minds. So there you go. So then what will happen is people will start arguing about these two premises. They'll say, well, does whatever begin to exist have a cause? Well, that's pretty straightforward, actually. I've heard some interesting arguments about this, Humean-type things on causality. But that the universe began to exist, that you might get a bit of pushback on. People might say to you, well, how, you know, science is temporary. You know, today's science might change tomorrow, you see? Just because we think the Big Bang's true now doesn't mean the Big Bang's going to be true in 50 years. We might change our minds. So what do you say to that? Well, what I'd say is you don't base it on the Big Bang. You see, you base it on the philosophical point that I made earlier, which is actually, irrespective of the Big Bang, at some point, something has to start. And it's not about what you observe in the universe, which might change depending on our understanding. It's actually about the fact that you can't have an actual infinite regress, you see. In fact, there's an interesting debate there about whether you can have an actual infinite of anything other than God's power, but in the physical world. Yeah, because if you had an infinite amount of peas, there'd be nothing but peas. Infinite amounts of hydrogen atoms, that's all you'd have. You see, you can't actualize an infinite. Yeah? You can have a potential infinite, it could go on forever. But an actual infinite of something, I don't think physically exists, and I don't think anyone's ever demonstrated that it does. And so what you want to do is think carefully about, if you're going to share this kind of stuff, think carefully about, how do I structure these things? Do I know why I believe each of these? Because you might find yourself in the weeds a little bit when you share. And that's one of the things I do want people to take away from it, is I want people to feel confident. Even if you don't repeat a lot of the stuff that I've said, I want you to feel like, you know what, now I do know that there's good reasons for this stuff. And I know I got someone I can talk to. I know there's something I can look up. And ultimately what I'd say is that I've seen people kind of buffer at this stage. And one of the practical considerations I wanted to touch on is that remember that ultimately all this is to point us to Jesus. That's what it's for, you see. It's quite tempting, especially for someone like me. I spent a long time thinking about this kind of stuff. It's very interesting. It's very nuanced. It's very entertaining. And I've seen people who, will spend years just arguing about, does God exist? What about that premise? What about this premise? What about this? What about the other? And ultimately, the evidence may not compel you, you see. It won't compel you necessarily, other than to choose, you see. At some point, you have to choose, which story do I want to inhabit? Because if you really want to, you can go, but I just think science is going to prove it wrong someday. Or I just don't, At some point, people have got to choose what story they want to inhabit. And the purpose of this kind of evidence is what it did for me, which is to kick away the objections, the foundations of the worldview that says this is impossible. And you're saying, oh, yes, it is. It is very much possible, friends. It is not unreasonable to believe in God. I'm happy to argue with any scientist, physicist who wants to come my way. It's no problem. You see, that's not the question, really. Ultimately, they can no more convince me there's no God than I can maybe convince them there is a God. You see, but what you're doing is you're opening people's hearts to the spiritual work. Because if we have people with hardened hearts, then you're going to struggle to get to them. They'll be like I was, just kind of going, yeah, that's a nice story, guys, but, I'm not feeling it. So I think the first consideration I think to think about when you're thinking about apologetics or you think about philosophy is to think about what it's there to do. It's not there necessarily to convince people. Yeah, it's just there to crack the door open, to make them realize the world may not be what they thought it was. Yeah, and to allow the Spirit to do its work. It's not that you, as a kind of philosopher, are just beating this person into intellectual submission. Yeah, you're just saying, hey, look, the world might be different to what you think, and it's actually pretty reasonable, and maybe you should look again. You see, we don't want to compel people. We want to invite them. Mm-hmm. We want them to come to their own understanding. Don't worry, by the way, about convincing people either. If you say this to somebody, and they kind of cross their arms at you and go, yeah, I'm not convinced. They might have just said to you, my favorite color is blue. You see, by saying I'm not convinced doesn't affect anything you've just said. So I don't worry about convincing anybody. Don't stress it. It's okay. You just share what you know, and if they're not convinced, that's fine. They can go away, and they'll think about it, you see, and see how we go. So don't worry about convincing people. It's enough to just tell them and then trust the Spirit. You see what I mean? Here's another thing. Don't worry about having all the answers to all the questions. Yeah? So if you do interact with someone and you throw it out, then it comes out, you see, it doesn't come out like this, does it, in a lecture hall? You know, it's very rare. Usually you're chatting with your friends and somebody will say, why do you believe in that stuff anyway? And you're like, oh, flip, I'm on the spot now. I've got to say something reasonable. And what do you say? What do you do? And so don't worry too much about saying, okay, I've got to have this, I've got to have the premises, you see? It's enough to just say, well, there's this argument. Well, actually, what about where did the universe come from anyway? And they go, yeah, but Big Bang. Yeah, but what about before that? And they'll go, pfft. And you go, yeah, exactly. I'm not saying that proves God. I'm just saying maybe it's not as clear as you think it is. You see, and that might be enough for people. You see what I mean? So don't worry about knowing everything. Don't worry about saying, oh, well, you know what? I don't know, but I know some people that if you want to know, we could explore that. You see, so don't feel pressure on yourself to make it like, oh, I've got to know all this stuff. I've got to, is that me? Sure. Hello? All right, sorry, guys. Yeah, don't feel pressured to know the answers. Don't feel pressured to embody the kind of intellectualism that Jim talked about. It's okay, you will be, you can do it. But also don't make it your kind of mission, you see? Just take the knowledge in, trust in Jesus, trust in the Spirit to help you share these things, and don't burden yourself too much with things. Yeah, that's important. Another thing to think about is watch out for people's hidden assumptions. Yeah? Hidden premises. What's that? Okay, I've had this a few times. People say, yeah, if God's so obvious, if God exists, why don't I know? Why isn't it obvious to me? Why all the hiddenness? Why do I have to pray and nothing happens? Why this? Why that?
You see, what's behind that question? What's behind the question? There's a few assumptions there, aren't there, about what God ought to do, who we are, lots going on. The assumption there is, well, God should make it obvious to me. And that is the right way for God to conduct affairs. And that's what I deserve as a human, and that's how the universe ought to be structured. All of those things are assumptions that are hidden away in that little question, you see. And if you're not careful, someone will put you on the back foot, well, I don't know, you see. Which you might say, well, actually, I'm not sure the world is like that, and I'm not sure that it should be like that. Why should it be like that? You see? I mean, if God loves us, he probably wants us to love God back. And if he wants that, then how can we do that unless we're free to love? Because if you're not free to love, do you actually love? It's not obvious to me that stamping made by God on everyone's forehead will necessarily lead to a better world. You see what I mean? So watch out for hidden assumptions, hidden premises behind people's questions. And make sure that you don't have to kind of dissect it in a really nerdy way like I just did. You can just be aware of what they're actually asking. There's usually a question behind the question, is what I'm saying. And just be sensitive to that. Sometimes people are asked something that seems innocent but might actually pertain to their life or to an experience they've had or to pain they've experienced. So you have to be just mindful of these things. And that's the other thing, is that belief in God is foundational. So when you meet someone out there and they say, well, you know, whatever, God, no big deal, you might think to yourself, well, that person doesn't care whether God exists or not. Well, that's not true. That's not true. They may have not admitted it to themselves, but they've actually already decided, haven't they? They've decided that God isn't really real. You see? They say to you, oh, you know, that's fine, maybe there's a God. But God's not real to that person, right? And so sometimes you might get into a discussion with someone and they might get a bit funny with you when you weren't expecting it, because actually the thing that you thought they were holding pretty loosely is not so loosely held as you thought, you see. And so just something to watch out for there. Okay, another point I had is to remember that the philosophical will very quickly turn theological, very quickly indeed, you see. So even just now, in the kind of, well, why is God hidden? All of a sudden, you're not really talking philosophy anymore, are you? All of a sudden, you're talking about, who is God? What's the purpose of life? Does God owe me an obvious demonstration of God's existence? Are these philosophical questions? Or even when I read this book, and I realized someone says, oh, well, souls don't exist, therefore God is false. And I'm like, well, I'm not sure your idea of the soul is what's in the Bible, actually. That's a theological point, isn't it? Is that philosophical? And so one thing to think about is you do want to make sure that you, as you probably have, Doug, because you're coming here to this training center, but to know the scriptures and know the story of God's work in the world, of his redemptive purpose, is really important if you're going to speak to these issues. Because ultimately, it will quickly go from these kind of high-voluted, you know, how interesting, you know, to quite personal, quite, why is God like this? Why is the world like that? Why did this happen to my friend? And so it'll turn on a dime. And so, yeah, just remember to keep that in mind. You don't have to necessarily prepare other than mentally, maybe in prayer. But that's something that I found. And often, when I think we're going to have a little chat about God's existence, I'm actually end up having a chat about why bad stuff happens, or a chat about why, you know, is everything predetermined or not, or whatever, you know. And these are things which are tricky. So there you go. And the last point I had in terms of the talking was that it really is all about the gospel. That's ultimately where it's got to lead to. Every single interaction, you know, you bring it back to the gospel. You see? Because ultimately, believing in a God is one thing, you see? But ultimately, like I said before, you've got the philosophical God, but it should be pointing you, you see? If God is powerful, if God has knowledge, if God is personal, and if God cares, then God is doing something, you see? and the world's not as it should be, and we're not as we should be, and that's pointing us to something, isn't it? It's pointing us to the gospel, you see? And so I'd say all of the things that I've told you now, we ought to subsume into that purpose, you see? That's really critical, because I've seen myself and other people who get into these kinds of things, and it becomes an end in of itself rather than a tool for sharing the gospel. You see, it's a good thing to know, but ultimately we have to remember what it's all about. So there you go.
Thank you for joining us on the Roots podcast. To connect with our community and to find other resources, visit chanctonbury.org.uk.